This morning we're going to go right into our first discipline, the discipline of worship. What is worship? Years ago, Coca-Cola had a slogan, Coke, it's the real thing. You know it used to be the real thing? That's why they named it Coca-Cola. It started, it had cocaine in it. And that's what made it the real thing. And I'm telling you, people loved it. They got addicted to it. And they had to take it out because it was the real deal. It was the real thing. And you know what? I want you to know something, that God is the real thing. You know, when it comes to worship, because Coca-Cola has been imitated by a lot of people, but nobody's quite duplicated what they originally had that caused that huge addiction back in the 20s and 30s. Nobody's been able to duplicate Coca-Cola, and that's why they still say, hey, we're the real thing. Well, they might be. There's a lot of imitations, but the real thing is this, that true worship, we ought to be addicted to God so much that something happens to us that it just absolutely, if we don't have it, we just kind of go through withdrawals. I've got to have God in my life. I want to talk to you about that this morning, about having the real thing. Jesus, the real thing, or worship, the real thing, the discipline of worship. There are a lot of imitations out there about what worship is, and this woman asked that question. She said, she just wanted to know, she goes, are you greater than Jacob? In other words, hey, what are you doing here? And she says, you know, we worship this way. And I love what Jesus did. He looks right at her and he goes, lady, you guys don't even know what you're worshiping. And that's what he says to her, didn't he? In John chapter 4, he says, you don't even know what you're doing. It kind of reminds me of Paul in Acts. Where the Apostle Paul, in the book of Acts, chapter 17, if you have your Bibles, I want you to flip over there and just take a look at this, because this is reminiscent of what's happening here. It's something that I believe continues in the church today. Acts chapter 17. Look at verse 22. Now you need to understand, Paul's standing up in a group of people just like you would be today in the Areopagus. It's a place where philosophers kind of got together and talked about the latest ideas. And he stands up and he says, I want to tell you something. And he looks around, and you got to understand where he's standing, all these Roman gods and goddesses and these statues everywhere. And he turns around, and there's somewhere in this Areopagus, there's a statue. You know, and some of the statues have names. I mean, there's Zeus, and there's Mercury, and there's all these different names, and Athena. He turns around, and there's one, and it says, to an unknown God. And Paul says the same thing that Jesus says to this woman. He says it to this group. He says, listen, I want to tell you something. Look what he says in verse 22. Paul stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, men of Athens, I see that in every way you're very religious. But as I walked around and I looked carefully at your objects of worship, now that's a focus, your objects of worship. Everything I see you worshiping, now watch what he says. For as I saw these objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. Isn't that great? Well, it's not great, but it really drives the point home. To an unknown God. I'm worshiping this statue and I don't even know who it is. And then he says, now that what you worship as something unknown, I'm about to proclaim to you. And I want to let you know this morning, I think it's real easy to be very religious in our world today. We have a world full of religion. We have a world full of statues everywhere, objects of worship. And there are things, and I want to submit to you this morning, even in the church that we worship, but it's not God. We may not even know what we're doing when we worship. In fact, if I were to ask you the question, I've been asking people this all week as I've been preparing. Tell me what worship is. Tell me what it looks like. And almost everybody inevitably says the same thing. Well, when I go to church to worship, now I'd go further with that, but it's already wrong. It's already wrong. And that's what Jesus did. He came to this woman and she starts asking her questions. And he goes right to the heart of the matter. And so this morning I want to talk about the heart. We're going to exercise the heart. You know, I'm so excited. I can walk. I can move around. I have no pain because I have a brace and I'm listening to my therapist. And every day she says, are you being good? And every day I lie and say yes. And I can do it. I'm looking so forward to working out. So this morning I want to exercise the greatest muscle, they say, in the body is the heart. It's very important. The heart's an amazing thing. So I want to exercise my heart this morning, so I brought some things. And you're supposed to get your heart going, your heart rate going. So I brought some things to really work out this morning. You know, because the heart is an amazing, it pumps 7 tons of blood a day. 14,000 pounds will go through your heart today alone. So I'm exercising right now and really working out that heart. I mean, if I do this every day, I'd say my heart's going to be in great shape. Now, what's interesting is I can exercise my heart real well. But what I need to do, see, I can still exercise my heart. I just want you to know. Well, George, you're not exercising. I'm exercising. Oh, I want you to know. No, that doesn't work. That's good chocolate, don't it? This is good fun. Put that on my finger. Yeah, see how my oxygen level's doing. Oh, no, I got something better. Don't worry, I'm working out. It's all right. I'm exercising. Oh, wait. Got a red one, too. In case you just like them this way, I got one of these, too. Well, I believe that I can stop my exercise because I think my heart's in much better shape right now. The heart's an amazing thing. It's an important muscle to exercise. You know what happens? I think sometimes we grab worship and we go, I'm worshiping God. The music starts, I worship God. Can I tell you something? We've really missed the boat. If we think, I just want you to know, I don't come to church to worship God. I come to church because I already worship Him. You see, in my life, I didn't show up here to say, well, I hope the worship's going to be good. That has nothing to do with my life. I don't look in the mirror and say, Lord, I hope my worship is good. It has nothing to do with the song that I sing. It has everything to do with the life that I live. You see, when I exercise worship, it's because of who I am, not because of what I do. It has the state of my being and not the state of my action. And Jesus comes along. You have to excuse me. I've got all kinds of chocolate in my teeth. That's going to be going down for a long time. I want you to know it's important if we're going to do this discipline and exercise the muscle. The muscle is an important thing because the muscle is all about, and I want to talk about our corporate disciplines. There's a few of them, and today we're going to take the first one. It's called worship. It's corporate because it's all about people around us. You cannot worship without those kind of things happening. Everything that encompasses is corporately. What happens in your daily life and everything that you do. And Jesus says it. He gives us a few things that we need to understand. Number one, He lifts in John chapter 4, verse 21, He says, Jesus declares it. And so I want you to know, if you disagree with me this morning, you're going to just have to go here because I'm taking it right from His lips. Jesus declares it. Woman, a time is coming when you'll neither worship Me on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. In other words, worship is a daily exercise. It's something you do. You didn't come into the building to worship God. You hopefully have been worshiping God, and so you came to this building. Does that make sense? It's not that I haven't worshiped. It's not that I didn't enjoy the music or the giving, the ability to worship God and say, God, thank You for what I can do today with my life. But worship is a daily exercise. Jesus says it right there. He says, it's not on this mountain. It's not in Jerusalem. Here's what we've done, and it's I'm going to get ahead of myself. I didn't come here to worship God. I came here because I already worship God. Romans 12:1. I want to show you something that can maybe open your eyes. Because I don't know if we understand this discipline. People say, I worship God. I love to get worship CDs. I love the worship band. I love the worship leader. I like the worship team. Can I tell you, all of those are made up. They're all part of worship. But that's such a small part of worship. If we define this area right here as worship, you have been duped into believing that God says, you must go to Jerusalem to worship Me. Jesus said, you don't go to Jerusalem to worship Me. I'm telling you, he says, lady, there's a time coming when you're not going to necessarily do it here, and you're not going to necessarily do it there, but you're going to do this on a daily basis. You're going to find yourself in a place, in Romans chapter 12, verse 1, Paul jumps in. He says, I want to be a part of this. Can I add to your teaching, Jesus? And it gets into Holy Scripture. And look at Romans chapter 12, verse 1 in your Bibles. You've got to see this. It's a great memory verse. It says, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God, which is your reasonable act of worship. Isn't that a great passage? Now, some of your Bibles say, is your reasonable service. Your spiritual service. Different translations. So I went back to the Greek. I said, we've got to find out what this means. What was he saying? What was Paul adding on to Jesus' words when Jesus said, look, lady, it's not going to happen in a building. That's not necessarily in a building. Don't get me wrong. It can happen in a building. It should happen in a building. It should happen everywhere. It's a daily moment lifestyle. Every moment, every hour, every day, lifestyle. And Paul jumps in and says, offer your body, present. Some of you says present. That word present is the same Greek word that Mary and Joseph had when they brought Jesus to the priest in the temple. And they said, here. And they brought him to the priest, and the priest went. And he took, could you imagine? The priest was holding the Son of God, the very one who spoke the world, and he's holding him. And God says, as he was presented, you're to present yourself to God, the high priest. Present yourself as a living sacrifice. Now, I looked that up. What is a living sacrifice? And it's interesting because right away you think sacrifice, you ought to think Old Testament, the Hebrew tradition of the priesthood of Leviticus. And you ought to say, well, that's where they had this beautiful altar with four corners. And this altar of bronze, and they'd bring an animal to the priest, and the priest would sacrifice the animal because you and I, in our sin, needed something to atone for us. The word is propitiation. We needed something to substitute. I needed something to take my place. Because of my sinfulness, I come to the altar of God. I'm supposed to be on that altar, but because I don't want to die, God has given me something that's in my place. A lamb, a bull, a dove, you name it. That's what they did. And the priest would cut open the sacrifice, the propitiation, the sin offering. He would open it up. They would pour the blood onto the altar, which represented life. And in blood, there's life. And without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness of sins. As they would open up that lamb or that animal, that sacrifice, then the priest would take and the fire would be lit, and he would take and cook that animal. And then the meat would be offered up to God first, the best choices to God. And then after that, you would take and you would eat and partake of that sacrifice, recognizing in your life that God has sacrificed and given you a way out. When Paul talks about it, right away you go, okay, I've got a picture. I'm to be a living sacrifice. Different Greek word here. He's not using the word propitiation. He's not saying, I want you to get up and be someone else's substitute. It's a different word. He uses the word sacrifice for praise. I want you to be a living praise of me. Isn't that great? My life is to be a living praise of God. Everything I do. Yesterday I was at a football game. And I watched 111,471 people lift up a praise in unison for 2.5 hours. It was awesome. Not because of the football game. I watched some of the football game. I just watched the people. 111,000 people in one place. And they learned how to cheer together. And they all had these things that I guess they've been doing for years, the tradition. And they're all doing these things. And I'm kind of caught up going, I don't know what I'm saying. And I'm trying to catch up with them and sing their songs. You know, hail to the... I don't know all the words, but I lift them. And I just sat there going, wow! How could this team ever lose? The energy in here is so tremendous. I'd be on the field floating. I'd be running through guys. The energy was amazing. The encouragement, the shouts of praise for their team. Win or lose. Can I tell you something? God says, I want you to climb up on an altar and throw yourself out to be a praise of God every day, every moment of your life. Win or lose, I will praise Him. In my life, things are going bad, I will praise Him. In my life, things are going great, I will praise Him. I will be a living sacrifice to God. And we sometimes think that I'll sacrifice to God and hope He'll be happy with me, to hear me. And Paul says, I want to be a living sacrifice. I want to honor God with my life. I want to pour myself out. And he says, offer your bodies. What's interesting here in this act of worship, it is the worship according to the law of God, fulfilling the law of God. He says, I want to fulfill everything about you, God. Everything that's ever been written, I want to praise you for it. Everything that's ever happened, I want to be obedient to it. And he says, I want to be a part of that in my life. I want to be a living sacrifice. And so we exercise that. Worship is a daily throwing. If I could give you another point, every morning when I wake up, I just want to just jump up on the altar of God and say, God, here I am. And the Apostle Paul said it in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33. He says, I die daily. Isn't that a great word? You know why he died daily? So God could live daily through him. He died daily to himself. He said, Paul said, I don't want to live. God, live through me. Live through me as a praise offering. And that's what he did. That's what it means to be a living sacrifice. It doesn't mean to be a dead sacrifice. And sometimes we have dead sacrifices. Dead sacrifice means, oh God, here we are again. That's called religion. And that's what he was saying. He said, a lot of people have this religion. We read that about the Apostle Paul when he said, men of Athens, what is this? They kind of, could you see him walking up there going up and going, oh, that? That's to an unknown God. You pray to him all the time. Why? They want to get him mad. Who is he? Don't know. What does he do? No idea. Okay, but you pray to him all the time. He says, I see you're very religious, but you don't know what you're doing. And I want you to know, in the discipline of worship, to wake up in the morning and say, God, I die daily. I throw myself on the altar every day of my life. I don't know about you, but when you remove yourself out of the picture, God can then move into your life in the picture. And I know people want Him moving and working, but we've got to be able to do that. We've got to worship daily. Isaiah 66 said this. I love these words. Isaiah 66, 33. He says, from one moon to another moon, from one Sabbath to another Sabbath, I praise you. I will worship my God from one Sabbath to the next. You know, he didn't say, I worship God on the Sabbath. He says, from this Sabbath to this Sabbath, I'm going to worship you. Monday through Saturday, I'm going to worship you. I love it. If you want to exercise something, listen, folks. You want to worship is a daily exercise. It's a daily exercise. And we need to really commit ourselves. How much you want to throw yourself on that altar of God determines how much God will throw Himself in you. God inhabits the praises of His people. You want God inhabiting your life? You want God inhabiting your family? You want God inhabiting your finances? You want God inhabiting your job? You want God inhabiting your health? You want God inhabiting your life? You have got to throw yourself on the altar. And the more you exercise that, the more God will do. I think of a young man who was just, they called him floppy socks. He had these big socks. You remember back in the 50s, those big tube socks and the big round colors and stripes and stuff, and I mean, just ugly. And this kid was so small in the 8th grade that they couldn't even fit him, and they would come down to his ankles. And they were knee-high socks, and he played basketball. And by the time he was in 8th grade, he had practiced 10,000 hours of dribbling the ball and passing the ball behind his back, spinning the ball on his hand, doing crazy stuff. At 8th grade, weighed all of about 80 pounds, and he made the varsity team of his high school in 8th grade. 10,000 hours. And the son said, son, if you're going to be good something, if you're going to be good at something, you need to commit your life to it and give it your all. Now, I want you to know something. That's what the word worship means. It means devote yourself. If I'm going to devote myself, I'm going to tell you something. This isn't going to cut it for me, okay? This is not going to get me anywhere in that. If I want to really do something, I've got to grab the Bowflex. I've got to grab this. I've got to get on the bag. I've got to get on the Stairmaster. I've got to get on the weights. I've got to commit myself and devote myself if that's what I want to do with my life. If I want God to work in my life, I've got to commit and devote myself. These young men grew up, graduated high school, played basketball at Louisiana State University, LSU, and he still today holds the record for the most points scored on average through his entire college career. He averaged 43 points a game. That's even higher than Michael Jordan and Shaquille O'Neal. His name was Pistol Pete Maravich. He was just a little kid that weighed not even a buck anything. But he committed and devoted himself to something so great that he said, this is it. He threw himself on the altar of basketball. That was his object of worship. And we see people doing that, whether it's music or acting or jobs. Can I tell you something? All of the other stuff will work if you throw yourself on the altar of God and let Him work in your life. That is the object of disciplining myself. You say, how does that work? Jot this down. Go memorize it when you get home. Matthew 6:33. Jesus said, but seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all of these things will be added to you as well. In other words, if you get on the right altar, every other altar is going to take care of itself. If you have no other gods before me, and I'm your God, you watch how life works. I will be a part of your life. The second thing, not only is worship a daily exercise, Jesus says there in the next verse, 22, He said, you Samaritans worship what you do not know. I love that. Worship is often misdiagnosed, isn't it? You ever talk to people about what worship is? Pastor, I didn't like the worship today. I said, well, then you need to change your life. You're the worship. I didn't like the music. Well, go get a CD. I didn't like this. Are you defining worship as a song? You've misdiagnosed worship. And you watch. In America today, and all over the world, I'm afraid, folks, and this isn't a... it can be a bad thing. I'm afraid we began worshiping worship. Let me say that again. I think we began worshiping worship. You see it happen. I go to conferences and seminars. If the right song comes on, you watch people. It's like pushing their button. And they go right into it, and they're 100%... But as soon as that song's over, they're not into it. And if the wrong song comes on, they don't have the same response. I'm thinking, you're not living a lifestyle. You're living a moment. You've not picked a life of worship. You picked an act of worship. And God says, stop worshiping the worship and worship the object of that worship. And I just want you to know, in my life, I am so guilty of this. I found myself doing that, and I have to be consistent. I have to go again and grab the weights and say, Lord, I need to exercise this so that the muscle will just automatically go the right way. I want to make sure my heart is in the right place. My knee is not in the right place. So my therapist said, he says, your muscle died out in there, and that's why your knee hurts so bad. We're going to build that back up and get it in the right place. It holds it in place. Listen, if your heart's not in the right place, it's because you haven't been exercising it. If your heart's in the wrong place, you're going to complain about things that have nothing to do with worship and have everything to do with us. Worship is the state of being in our lives, of being on the altar of God, and it gets misunderstood. In fact, I had to go back. I tried to find out when was the first person that worshipped, when the word was used. Wouldn't you want to know that? Who did it? When was it? When did it happen? Who did it first? The best I could find is Genesis 22. It was Abraham. Abraham. I know people did that before, but where you can really find it, Abraham is on his way, and in verse 5 it says this. He turns to his servant. He's got his son there. Abraham's definitely over 100 years old now. His boy is maybe 12, 14, whatever. He takes his boy to Mount Moriah. He's on his way. They're going to worship God. He says, stay here with the donkey. Me and my boy are going to go worship God. So you think he packs up his bongos. He's got his tambourine. He's got his little guitar. And he's on his way up. We're going to go worship God. He doesn't have any of those objects in his hand. You know what he has in his hands? He has a knife. He has some wood. And he has a fire. You know what he's going to go do to worship God? He's going to put his son on the altar of God. You know what he's doing? He's being obedient. You want a definition of what true worship is? True worship is being willing to lay everything you have on an altar and that which is most precious to you. And you can lay it down before God, knowing God can raise it back up. And that's what he does with the son. He raises his hand of worship with a knife in it. His son is sitting there. And I don't know if he's singing Just As I Am or In the Sweet By and By, because he's about to go there. But he said, and Abraham is worshiping God, raising his arm. He's worshiping God, raising his arm. He's worshiping God when he prepares the fire. He's getting the fire ready, and he's worshiping God. Now, that messes with the definition. I think it's misdiagnosed, oftentimes, worship. Worship is what we do with our lives on a daily basis. You want to worship God? Let me throw this out to you. Buy a Happy Meal for someone. Buy a Happy Meal and you will worship God. You ever buy a Happy Meal for God? I bought and got a cheeseburger. I bought them a 6-inch turkey club sub from Subway. You say, wait a minute, I'm not being disrespectful. I've worshiped God. A young lady I met on the streets of Philadelphia, a grandmother, she was probably in her 60s. She had no food and nowhere to go. And so I invited her in for lunch, and we sat down, we had a sub sandwich. She said, you're a Christian, aren't you? Right away, that's the first thing she said. I said, yes, I am. She goes, I could tell there's just something different about you. I want to be the praise of God on an altar. I want to be His sacrifice living. And then I want to get a good definition. I don't want to misdiagnose what worship is. Because Jesus said it, didn't He? Who are my true followers? He says, those who do the will of my Father. Well, what's the will of the Father? To love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And that's what Abraham was doing. And to love your neighbor as yourself. You want to be a true worshiper and know what worship is? Buy God a happy meal. And I don't mean to be disrespectful there, but everything you do. Listen, when you got up yesterday, when I rode on the motorcycles with my friends, I was worshiping God. I was living my life as a praise to God. When I was with the men's group praying, I was worshiping God. When I got in my car and I drove, I was worshiping God. When I hugged my kids when I got home, and this morning when I got up, I said, I love you, I was worshiping God. When I woke up this morning, the first thing in my mind was, God, here I am, what do you want today? I'm worshiping God. Everything I do is on the altar of God. And we need to define that. We need to be able to put that up there. I'll tell you what, when you start obeying and following God and throwing yourself on the altar, we don't have bad definitions of God. In church, we misunderstand what worship is. In fact, in one service, I got this email a while ago. I thought this would fit really nice here. His name was Bill. He has wild hair, wears a t-shirt with holes in it. By the way, the church was having its worship service, okay? They were singing their songs, and Bill walks into their church. Wild hair, wears a t-shirt with holes in it, jeans and no shoes. You got the idea? A hippie? Let's say it again. Wild hair, wears a t-shirt, holes in it, jeans and no shoes. You got shoes on? All right. He's over here? Oh, he's over here. Well, yeah. He's got shoes on, too. He said, I'll take them off. I told him, I said, you're going to be my illustration today. I didn't literally mean that, but this was literally his wardrobe for his entire 4 years of college. He's brilliant. Kind of profound and very, very bright. He became a Christian while he was in college living like this. Across the street from the campus is a well-dressed, very conservative church. They want to develop a ministry to the students, but are not sure how to go about it. One day, Bill decides to go there. He walks in with no shoes, jeans, his t-shirt, his wild hair, Brad. The service has already started, and so Bill starts down the aisle looking for a seat. The church is completely packed, which is really nice. It's completely packed, and here's what happens. He can't find a seat, and by now, people are really looking a bit uncomfortable. But no one is saying anything. Bill gets closer and closer to the pulpit, and he still can't find a seat. When he realizes there are no seats, he just squats right down on the carpet. By now, the people are really uptight, and there's a lot of tension in the air. Not sure what's happening and going to happen. It's very thick. About this time, the minister realizes that from way at the back of the church, a deacon gets up and this older gentleman is slowly making his way towards Bill. Now, the deacon is in his 80s. He has silver gray hair and a three-piece suit on. A godly man, very elegant, very dignified, and very courtly. He walks with a cane, and as he starts walking towards this boy, everyone is saying to themselves that you can't really blame him for what he's about to do. How can you expect a man of his age and his background to understand some college kid on the floor? It takes a long time for the man to reach the boy. The church is utterly silent, except for the clicking of the man's cane. All eyes are focused on him. You can't even hear anyone breathing. It's so tense. The minister can't even preach the sermon until the deacon does what he has to do. And now they see this elderly man drop his cane to the floor, and with great difficulty, he lowers himself and sits down next to Bill. And he worships with him so he won't be alone. And now Everyone chokes up with emotion in the church. And when the minister gained control, he says, what I'm about to preach, you will never remember. But what you just saw, you will never forget. I want you to know that worship is misunderstood. That man worshiped God. And I want you to know today, I want to be so addicted to God in my veins and in my heart. I want to exercise so much in my heart the act of worship every day of my life to throw myself on the altar that I don't miss moments like this and misdefine who God is and what He's doing in my life because I was so busy worrying about how I felt about that guitar or how I felt about that 88.3 song or how I felt about what the pastor preached or how what I thought about the person next to me. I said, worship God is about what I do with my life. I want you to know, get a good definition. And finally, Jesus closes it, and I love this. And I close with this. Worship is measured by a ruler. By one ruler. He said, those who worship me, he says to this lady, I love this. And this lady is hurting. She's the kind of lady sitting on the floor, by the way. She's had five husbands. She knows how men can use her and abuse her. She knows what it's like to be discarded. She knows what it's like for men to sneak late at night away from their wives, knock on her back door, slip in, have an intimate relationship with her, not caring about her, and then leaving in the middle of the night only to leave her, and every woman in town knows it. She's sitting on the floor. And will anybody come and sit next to her? You see, not only is she a woman of ill repute, but she's a Samaritan. And of course nobody's going to sit next to a woman like that. And Jesus comes and He sits down so she won't be alone. She has someone to worship with. And He calls you and I to do that. He calls you and I to sit down next to people who are alone in this world. People who don't know this God says, who is this? We don't know. It's an unknown God. Well, let me tell you who He is. Can I sit down next to you? Why? And you don't have to tell them, I'm worshiping God. Watch me. And you sit next to Him. And Jesus says, now how do you do it? Here's how you do it. You do it in spirit and you do it in truth. Spirit, it's interesting that word. It's pneuma. People tell you, every song, every poem, kids, every song on the radio I listen to, adults, every song you hear, listen to your heart. I think it's ABBA or somebody, Stevie Nicks. I don't know who it is. Listen to your heart. Listen to what it says. Follow your heart. Can I tell you something? The heart is not to be followed. Mike Graham knows that. He memorized that, and he quotes that one a lot. Where's Mikey at? Is he back with the kids? The heart, most of all, is deceived and not to be trusted, Ecclesiastes says. Why? Because the heart is the flesh. There's a word he uses here. Jesus says the pneuma. He says, those who worship God will worship God pneuma, spirit, the spirit of God that comes upon us, the spirit of God that says this, it's the rational spirit, the power by which all human beings feel, think, and decide. And so when the world says, listen to your heart, they're not talking about the pneuma, they're talking about a word called sarx. It's the flesh and bones of your heart. Follow your heart. If I followed my heart and did everything my heart wanted to do, my life would be done. Listen, I'm not about to follow my heart without the Spirit of God in my heart. When the Spirit of God comes into my heart, now I have the pneuma, and I want to follow God. So I have the heart. He says, worship God in spirit. You know, God is spirit. You can't worship Him without your spirit. If you haven't received the Spirit of God and gotten saved in your life, you're going to have a hard time worshiping Him in spirit. You're going to be very religious, but you don't know what you're worshiping. You've got to have the Spirit of God within you. And then truth, aletheia. He says, worship God in spirit and in truth. Your spirit, that's the heart. And aletheia, worship Him in truth. That's the mind. He says, you worship God with your spirit and you worship with truth. Truth is this. It's the part of the mind that's free from, listen to this, aletheia in the Greek means the candor of my mind, which is free from affection, pretense, simulation, falsehood, and deceit. Let me say that again. I want to worship God in truth. I want to worship Him free from deceiving myself. Simulation, faking it. I don't want to fake it. God, in my mind going, I'm worshiping Him. I'm not sure. I'm just not sure I'm getting it. I want to get it with God. I want to get with God. I want to know that I'm worshiping Him. It's so easy. And are you ready for this? Deceit. Don't worship God with deceit. I come in on Sundays and pretend with pretense, it says, without pretense. Worship Him in truth. I want to strip everything away and say, I'm not faking it, God. There are people who fake it every day. I call it the 750 and the two Slurpees people. That's what I call it. You know why? Because people fake it. They want God, or maybe they really go because if they wanted Him, He says, I'm right here, I'll be found. If you want to find me, you can find me. And here's the 752 Slurpee people. It's the people who sell out their soul. They come in, they say, worship is an act, I sang my songs, I got my duty done, my religious unknown God has been worshipped. But they are not about to go exercise their faith in any manner of living. I am not about to do something that can cause me work. Discipline. And so what they do is they go out and they compromise their life. And most people compromise their life with $7.50 and two Slurpees. Yes, I hear that. Is my time up? $7.50 and two Slurpees. Let me tell you what it is. It's the idea that two guys are sitting in prison and this has happened. And the one guy looks at the guy sitting there, the hard-nosed ruffian, and this guy's thinking, I'm in the wrong place. What am I doing here? I didn't do anything hardly at all. He looks at this guy, what are you in here? He says, I'm doing 15 years for armed robbery. What did you do? I robbed the First National Bank. I tried to get away with $500,000. I got 15 years for armed robbery with a .38 caliber pistol. And he turns and he says, what are you in here for? And the guy says, armed robbery. Oh yeah, what'd you rob? 7-Eleven. I got $7.50 and two Slurpees. Listen, 15 years, armed robbery is armed robbery. Are you really going to sell your soul out? I'm standing next to Hitler and think, what's he going to hell for? Standing in line waiting for judgment. And I go, oh, yeah. I mean, he genocided the Jews and the blacks and this and that. I mean, the guy was just the racist and he was a murderer and he was an antichrist. Of course he's going. And God says, step on up. And I step on up. He goes, now you. He says, you are a liar. You are a gossip. Yeah, but I wasn't that. Say, hey. You know what? If you're going to sell your life out, you might as well sell it out because it's the same results. If I'm going to sell my life out for Jesus Christ, you might as well climb on the altar and allow God to have everything instead of just 10% of you. Let Him have 100% of you. Don't just sell out a little bit for God. Sell out everything for God, because we sell out a little bit for the devil and don't think a big deal about it. But listen, if you sell a little bit out, it's the same thing as selling all out. Jesus said, if you're not for me, you're against me. And I see people and I think, what are you doing? You sold out for a couple of Slurpees. And I say, let's sell out for heaven. Let's sell out for God. And here it is. You can measure your worship by one ruler. You have one ruler. And here it is. Between my head and my heart, 12 inches, one ruler. My head, the truth of God. My heart, the Spirit of God. One ruler in my life. My head and my heart working together. I will worship Him in spirit and truth. And the Bible says, those are the people that God seeks. And the word seek means run after, to pursue. In fact, it's the word seek, it's a beautiful word. I wrote it in my Bible. I said, that's the one I'm going to put in my Bible. It means to go after, to pursue, and to crave. God craves. Do you crave anything? I mean, do you crave anything at all? And it says, God craves people who worship in spirit and truth. And I know this is a poor illustration, just a chocolate donut. But God says, I crave you who worship me between your head and your heart. I'm coming after you. I'm pursuing you. I'm looking for people like you. Follow me. Let's do this. And so that's what God does. So I have some things at the Welcome Center. I put together a handout that will show you, if you want to take home, I think there's about 100, 125 of them. It didn't make it. Our printer was not printing. So there's a bunch, but I'm going to have them on the website too. But Susan has them. And what I'm going to do is make those available for you to go home and say, I want to learn how to worship on, I want to find that altar and be able to know what true worship is in my family. I'm going to start practicing some stuff. Maybe there's some things in there. And so I printed some stuff out, found some stuff, some people did some great research online, and I think it's very practical and helpful. But you know, when it comes down to it, it's this. I was at a funeral, Mrs. Kuhn's funeral, and I had a moment that touched me at your mom's funeral. It touched my life. A lady got up to sing a song at your mom's funeral. And afterwards, I went up to her and said, thank you for singing that song. You've changed my life today. And she goes, okay, you're welcome, and walked off. She had no idea. She got up at your mom's funeral, and she said, she sang a song, but she said this. This is her song. This was her song. And I sat there. I don't have a song.
What will people sing or say about me when I'm gone? Well, they say, oh, this was the song. What is your heart song today? That's what worship is. Not what is the music song, but what is your heart life song? And for a couple weeks now, I've been contemplating what my life song is. I don't know. I've been listening to music and I've been singing in the morning and I've been doing things, and honestly, I don't know what my life song is. But I want my life song to be a praise to God. I hope you can find your life song. What causes you to just sing an outburst in the strangest of places? That's your life song. What is your life song? Find one, and you will be the worshiper that God seeks on the altar of God. And He will bring praise to the world. That's what you are. Your worship happens in about 3 or 4 minutes when you start walking out those doors. And you start encountering people, your worship begins. You're here because you're a worshiper. And you get to worship because that's what you are. Let's stand and pray together. Father, teach us.